think as a group, actors are what I call happy people. Mm-hmm. I think we're very moody people. Like we have, you know, great ups and great downs. And if something goes well or if something turns out badly, you're depressed for days. And I think we're terribly peculiar that way and rather lonely people, actually.
You were just listening to the voice of Betty Davis again, talking a little bit about actors and their personalities. We are back. Welcome back to Hollywood Declassified. I'm John William Law. We have been talking about Betty Davis and the making of Wicked Stepmother and sort of her final kind of days and final years and final, you know, episodes, pieces of her career. As I mentioned, I think in one of the earlier episodes and something that I talk about in the book, Wicked Becomes Her, Larry Cohen is the writer-director of Wicked Stepmother. He was the instrumental force behind it. He'd actually mentioned, I think, and again, I talked about in the book, that he saw Betty Davis at the Golden Globes. He actually got an invitation to go to the Golden Globes in 1986. He said he got a ringside table at the Golden Globes, not because of who he was, but because his sister, Ronnie Chasen, was one of the industry's foremost publicists. And when it was announced that Betty Davis was going to present the next award, there was a huge amount of applause. He said he was sort of visibly shaken when he saw Betty Davis came out. She couldn't have weighed more than 80 pounds, he said, and she was clearly recovering from a stroke. Obviously, as she came out, she sort of dragged one leg behind her. It was something that she was sort of had done pretty much for the remainder of her life. But he said that he was sort of struck by the admiration for her and for the people that sort of were kind of applauding her. And he felt that she would be more appreciative of work than for sort of lifetime achievement awards and thunderous applause for kind of coming out to give an award. So he thought that, you know, he hoped that someone would sort of take notice and give her a job. Then he started thinking about the idea of doing that himself. But he did learn a little while later that she had been cast in another movie, which was called The Whales of August. And The Whales of August was made a couple years before Wicked Stepmother. It was a sort of art film, small film. Did get a little bit of notice in terms of her being in the star. Lillian Gish was a star, Anne Southern, Vincent Price. There were some decent names in it, but it was sort of this little, kind of quaint little picture about two older women in the kind of coastal area of Maine, and they were sort of, aging, sort of almost like an On Golden Pond type thing, I guess you could say. Not high drama in some respects, but certainly good performances. In a lot of ways, had Whales of August been Betty Davis's final career film, it probably would have marked a better end for her in terms of as a big screen kind of, you know, swan song performance, because it was a good performance. And she was mostly confined to a wheelchair and, you know, sort of aging, and you know, her character was aged. And so it's sort of her current scenario, her health situation, her appearance and her frailness and stuff all sort of, you know, almost added to, you know, the performance that she gave. And, you know, she certainly didn't give an Oscar-worthy performance. She was not nominated for an Academy Award or anything for it. But it was certainly a good film for her to have been in. She, again, did not, she spoke relatively highly of Gish in some interviews that I'd seen, but at the same time, people said that she was very nasty on the set and did not have a good time with the other actors. And she sort of, you know, again, sort of played this sort of diva personality that, you know, she, some people suspected she really just didn't want to share the screen with another legend of Hollywood or of, you know, kind of the thespian acting range. Gish was, you know, obviously had been around longer. She started in the silent films. She certainly didn't have as an illustrious long film career as Betty Davis did, but she certainly did a lot of really good films and is, you know, became an icon of the silver screen. She was a little bit older than Betty Davis, and Betty Davis was sort of irritated at the fact that she was going to be playing her younger sister in the film, and she sort of resented the fact that that they were sort of seen as, you know, Betty Davis was seen as sort of, you know, a little older or almost appeared to be older than Lillian Gish was. Lillian Gish was actually in, I guess, better health at the time. Another episode that happened around the same time of this, again, after she had done, I guess in the period around Wicked Stepmother and the Golden Globes, is that Betty Davis's daughter, BD, had published a book called My Mother's Keeper, and it was sort of a tell-all book about, you know, life with her mother growing up as the daughter of Betty Davis. Betty Davis was sort of livid at this when she found out that her daughter had written a book. She felt it was a huge insult. In fact, she saw it as something similar to what Joan Crawford's daughter Christina had done to her when she wrote, you know, "Mommy Dearest." And so Betty Davis was incensed at this and sort of cut her daughter off at the time. And it became a very big deal, and you know that she, you know that her daughter sort of cashed in on her and sold her out, and her daughter BD had never claimed that it was intended to be a book like Mommy Dearest, but obviously there are elements of the book that sort of seem similar in terms of talking about Betty Davis's personality and how difficult it is to live with a woman that's sort of self-involved and kind of narcissistic, I guess, in a way. You could read some of that into the book, but Betty Davis ended up countering that book with her own book. She actually wrote a book called This and That. She used her assistant to help her pull together, sort of some recollections of her career. And so in that book, it is not really just a word-for-word kind of retort of BD's book, but it is sort of a recollection of a different kind of elements of her career. It talks about Hollywood and people that she'd worked with, Joan Crawford and, a lot of those movies and stuff. But she also does sort of try and address, BD and the story that spun about her to try and claim that they're sort of untrue to some extent. But Larry Cohen had actually picked up a copy of her book, and he said that he got, while he was reading it, he got the idea of a Betty Davis movie. He saw that, this idea was, for a comedy about a young, happily married couple who return from vacation to discover that the wife's widowed father has gotten remarried. And obviously, the woman that he would have remarried would have been Betty Davis. And so that in itself became the idea to build on the script and the idea. So he said he imagined having to live under the roof with a vitriolic Betty Davis. And he said from there, basically, the screenplay wrote itself. And within a week, he had a finished script for Wicked Stepmother, which he promptly sent to Betty Davis's agent, and the agent rejected it. Betty Davis had never even seen it. But that was sort of the end of it at round one, I would say. But Cohen did not give up. He actually got the story back into Betty Davis's hands a little while later. And Cohen said, "I couldn't give up, however, since there was no one else who could play the part." So he said that actually months later, his publicist mentioned that casually in a conversation that he knew film historian Robert Osborne. And it just happened to be that Robert Osborne was a friend of Betty Davis's. And not only a friend of Betty Davis, he actually lived in the same apartment building as the star. So with the help from his publicist, he actually managed to get the script back to Betty Davis through the hands of Robert Osborne. And this time, Betty Davis actually looked at the script. He said that Betty Davis called just a few days later, and he knew it was her because the smoke was coming out of the telephone. He said her voice cracked and over the lines, and sparks frayed over the electrical cord. She said, "Well, I certainly got a few laughs thanks to you last night," she snapped. "Am I mistaken? Or did you, write this especially for me?" And Cohen said that he had indeed done that. Her agent's professional recommendation was that she turn down the project. However, Bette was obviously eager to work. So she took the script, including all of its flaws, and saw that there was some potential. She actually agreed to consider the project and suggested that they arranged a meet at her home. So she was interested if he was willing to drop by her place. He agreed, and he went and brought along his agent. And he said that he got stepped inside Betty Davis's home. He saw her. She had moved into a smaller kind of condo back in Hollywood. She'd lived in New York for a long time, a while after her career sort of slowed down a bit. But she returned to Hollywood when she started working a little more regularly in TV and things, and decided to spend the remainder of her life there. And so instead of buying a palatial estate, she sort of downsized, and she bought a small sort of two-bedroom condo in Hollywood. Actually, she knew actor Roddy McDowall, who was a sort of involved in real estate. He has a bunch of real estate deals, and he had, I guess he was sort of investing in a condo development project, and she knew the area well. It actually was an area that she'd once lived in a home. So she ended up kind of buying this sort of brand new condo and living there, but it was a smaller, more downsized thing. And Cohen sort of noticed that she really didn't have a lot of Hollywood memorabilia around. He didn't see her Oscars, and there weren't lots of posters and pictures of her and things like that. She did have some pictures of her children and grandchildren on the mantle and things like that. Even though she was angry and sort of cut her daughter out, she was still present in the house in photographs and things. So, but he did sit down and met with her, and they talked about the film and the project, and she sort of ultimately agreed to do the film. His agent was shocked when they left. He said, you know, I can't believe you're going to consider working with her. Like, she looks so frail and ill health. You know, are we going to be able to get through the production of this? And so Cohen was sort of bound and determined to do this. He wanted very much to do a film with Bette Davis, to have her on his list of stars that he had worked for or directed. And so he sort of forged ahead, and the big challenge obviously was going to be insurance. They were going to have to get insurance against the fact that Bette Davis may not survive to live to finish the film, and so they ended up getting an insurance policy to cover the film in the event that she died or became too ill to kind of complete the filming. And that's where we're going to leave it this time. We're going to pick it up next time with a little more going detail of the actual filming and the release and sort of result of the Wicked Stepmother kind of final kind of act, I guess, of changing the film to kind of complete it. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.